the nation's largest fast food chain is under fire this week after 10 employees in 9 cities filed sexual harassment complaints with the federal government against McDonald's and its franchisees.
The workers, all women, each say they reported the harassment, but managers ignored their complaints or even retaliated against them. Now backed by 2 advocacy groups, they're taking their case to the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission.
Regardless of what happens next, the case is shining some light on the experience of fast food workers across the country, many of whom say they have experienced harassment at work. A 2016 survey of women who worked in non-managerial positions in fast food found that 40% had experienced unwanted sexual behavior at work.
Shireen Alamzadeh joins us now. She is a Chicago attorney and the co-founder of Healing to Action, which describes itself as a worker-led movement to end gender-based violence. She also co-founded the Coalition Against Workplace Sexual Violence. Shireen, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me.
So since the beginning of the Me Too movement, many industries have come under the microscope on the issue of sexual harassment. Some really big cases, they started in Hollywood and it spread from there. But do you think that the fast food industry tends to get overlooked in the broader conversation about sexual harassment?
Well, I think it's telling that there was a survey that was done by Fight for 15 a couple of years ago, really highlighting this problem, and that there wasn't the same level of media attention around the experiences of fast food workers in McDonald's at that time. Certainly, I think the Me Too movement has provided an opportunity for workers from many different industries to come forward and share their stories, and so I'm heartened to see the momentum that is building in this movement of fast food workers to share their stories and to seek justice, in the face of all of the media attention that has been focused for the most part at this time on Hollywood and some higher earning industries.
And so that brings us to this week when 10 current and former McDonald's employees, again, all women, filed sexual harassment complaints against the company. We have these women. What kind of allegations are we seeing here?
So I think many of the allegations had to do with supervisory harassment, so experiencing unwanted comments, groping, touching from people who had power over fast food workers in these restaurants. There was also, I believe, allegations of retaliation as well as not taking action when it was reported to other levels of management. And just to sort of give a little bit of a landscape here of what we're talking about, these are workers who are earning very little money, close to minimum wage, sometimes just minimum wage. And so if McDonald's is their primary form of income, their primary source of income, they're likely to be living at or below the poverty line. So these are poverty level wages. So people in these jobs have very little security in actually coming forward and reporting any sort of harassment. They also have very limited resources to seek legal recourse if they want to pursue a claim against one of the most powerful corporations in the world with an extremely sophisticated legal apparatus behind it. So the fact that these workers are coming forward and reporting this, and the fact that, in fact, some recent studies have shown that food service workers are they make up a very large percentage of complaints that are filed at the EEOC, all go to show the scope and scale of this problem, given that these are people who really, have no reason to report, and yet they're still coming forward in large numbers.
Well, and it sounds like it could be a really tenuous situation for them, as you mentioned, given that this might be their only form of income. They're not earning that much. So this job is really, it's important. And, many people might not be stepping up to say, hey, this has been happening. So are we seeing that, given that this lawsuit has been, or that the complaints came up this week, it came up in the past. But are we seeing that, or are you anticipating that we could see many more of these complaints come out now that these 10 women have stepped forward?
Yes, I think that is definitely the case. As I think was mentioned before, there were some charges that were filed a couple of years ago, and I believe it's fairly unclear what McDonald's has done in response to those complaints. I believe some of them are still pending at the Equal Employment Commission. But what's different with this group of workers is that there has been a very coordinated legal effort, in part because of the Me Too movement and the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund, which launched earlier this year, these workers are actually connected with attorneys who are pursuing their claims. And I think it's important to note that while fast food workers and other low-wage workers make up a large percentage of complaints that are filed at the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, because of how expensive and harrowing and time-consuming the litigation process can be, most of those complaints never make it to court or to any sort of really favorable resolution for the workers. And so the fact that now there are attorneys that are not just representing these workers, but are that are coordinating legal strategy and working in collaboration with other activist groups like Fight for 15, I think shows the potential for a much more sort of vigorous, you know, approach and response to this problem at a national level.
We're talking to Shireen Alamzada right now. She is a Chicago-based attorney and the co-founder of Healing to Action, which is it describes itself as a worker-led movement to end gender-based violence. And she's also the co-founder of the Coalition Against Workplace Sexual Violence. And we're talking about lawsuits brought forward by 10 McDonald's employees who say that they were sexually harassed on the job. So what's at stake here with these complaints for McDonald's?
So my understanding of McDonald's immediate response to the complaints is that they're arguing that they don't have responsibility for the hiring practices or labor practices of their franchisees, so the restaurants that are franchised. So most of these complaints are alleged both against the corporation, the McDonald's corporation, as well as these independent franchisees. So that is their immediate, I think, response, and that is typically the response they have given when they have been, confronted.
And what consequences could the company potentially face if, you know, the EEOC says you need to change your ways?
Well, with individual lawsuits, they could face, the possibility of having to pay monetary damages. There could also be, efforts made in the complaints for McDonald's to change certain practices. I know that the Fight for 15 is asking specifically for training, for mandatory training for the restaurants. And I believe there might be a couple of other demands. So it's possible that there will be some policy changes. Now, I just want to be clear that McDonald's, again, it's a very sophisticated corporation. It has a huge legal team, legal apparatus behind it. It has policies, and so I think it's important to remember that while these lawsuits might result in, you know, new policies or, some level of trying to sort of reform existing practices, that it's not enough to have a great policy or to have compliance training. That this really comes down to an issue of culture and of how workers are being valued in the workplace. And if you have a restaurant culture where people are being paid very little, where there's a lot of labor violations happening, regardless of how great you have, what type of great written policy that you have, you may not see much change in the way of the level of abuse or harassment that people are experiencing. So it's important to recognize that and to try to make sure that we're holding all businesses accountable, but particularly very powerful and well-resourced businesses like McDonald's, to shifting that culture and making sure that workers are experiencing a dignified and safe workplace every day.
We're talking right now with Shireen Alamzada. She is the co-founder of Healing to Action and the Coalition Against Workplace Sexual Violence. And we're talking about sexual harassment in the fast food industry. This week, 10 employees in 9 cities filed sexual harassment complaints with the federal government against McDonald's and its franchisees. And we're looking at the impact that might have in low-wage workplaces across the country.
You can join in, too, at 800-642-1234. Are we telling your story here today? Have you experienced harassment in a low-wage job such as fast food? What do you think can be done to crack down on harassment in this kind of work? And what questions do you have? Give us a call now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send an email to ideas@wpr.org.
We'll continue this conversation here on Central Time after the short break.
We're continuing our conversation with Shireem Elmzada, co-founder of Healing to Action and the Coalition Against Workplace Sexual Violence. We're looking at sexual harassment complaints filed with the federal government this week against McDonald's and its franchisees, as well as the broader issue of harassment in low-wage work, such as fast food.
You can join in, too, at 800-642-1234. Have you experienced harassment in a service or a retail job? If so, did you report it? And what ended up happening? What do you think can be done to better protect employees in low-wage jobs? And, you know, what questions do you have? You can give us a call at 800-642-1234. Again, that's 800-642-1234. Or you can send an email to ideas@WPR.org. Now, Shireem, right before we went to the break, we were talking about a change in culture that needs to happen in these lower wage workplaces. And I know you've written about this in the past, where this is usually the first job that many people have. So how important do you think it is to demonstrate good workplace behavior early on?
I think it's critically important. It's true that, you know, a good portion, a large percentage of the low-wage workforce is young people. And the way that a lot of people come into the workforce is through that, you know, fast food job, working in a restaurant, doing retail. And it does happen that these industries do have extremely high rates of sexual harassment. And so if that's the first time that you're in the workplace, remembering as well that younger workers are vulnerable in a variety of ways. They may not, this may be their, you know, they have certain attitudes towards authority. They may feel that if they report harassment, they would get in trouble just based on other experiences they're having as young people. All of these types of patterns or behaviors in the low-wage workplace are going to shape and condition how people experience sexual harassment as they move through different sectors of the workforce. So if you feel like it's something that happened and was normal in your first job, you may be less likely to react to it, report it, call it out in your next job. If you're somebody that did it in your first job and nothing happened, again, it's creating this expectation of impunity that then follows people through their careers as they start to gain power. So I think it's a really important intervention point in our society for helping people understand, you know, what is appropriate and respectful behavior, what is a safe workplace, what is it supposed to look like, and really trying to normalize that both for young people and for anyone who's working in that job.
And it sounds like there is a ripple effect when this does happen, both for the people being harassed and the people committing the harassment. But let's look at some of what recourses that some of these low-wage employees might have in these kinds of situations.
Yeah, so I mean, there's all kinds of laws that prohibit sexual harassment in the workplace. Obviously, there's the federal law, Title VII, which is, you know, which is enforced through the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, which is what we saw in this case. There's also a variety of state and local laws and ordinances that also provide additional protection, sometimes even broader protections for low-wage workers against sexual harassment. It's also a workplace health and safety issue. So there's, you know, occupational safety and health laws that can be used. And then finally, I think one of the most important mechanisms that people have, which returns to the issue of McDonald's and the fight for 15, is union organizing and collective action in these situations where, for example, unionized workers could work additional protections into a collective bargaining agreement with a large employer. Now, the issue is that McDonald's workers are not unionized, and so that is one of the main vulnerabilities that they face, is that a lot of times they do have to go and make these complaints by themselves. And again, thinking about what that means as somebody who is living paycheck to paycheck, is struggling to pay rent, to try to, you know, bring a lawsuit against one of the most powerful corporations in the world, and potentially do so without an attorney, or even if they have an attorney, it's not going to be always the case that attorney is going to have the resources that match. I mean, it's probably very rarely going to be the case that attorney has the resources to match McDonald's. So So thinking about how collective action and unionization are so important when we're talking about such a vulnerable workforce and such large companies.
So this lawsuit is being brought to the EEOC. That's a federal agency. As an attorney, what kind of game plan is there by going this route?
Well, the way that the process works, to my understanding, these were individual complaints. So the EEOC is the law enforcement agency that investigates charges of discrimination. And so the first step in the process is that the agency will investigate the claims and decide whether or not to make a finding of discrimination. This is the first step for most, for any employee who wants to bring a lawsuit. You have to go to the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission first. And then some people will then file a lawsuit in federal court, alleging the misconduct that was brought in the original charge. But it's going to the federal court, which would actually then entitle the worker to have their case heard, potentially to obtain money damages and other forms of relief. So the charge filing is really just the first step, and there's a lot more that happens. A lot of times these cases take several years to work their way through the federal court system, and sometimes the parties will settle at some point, sometimes early in the process, sometimes later on, and reach an agreement that doesn't require litigation at all.
Shireen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Shireen Alamzada is a Chicago-based attorney and co-founder of Healing to Action and the Coalition Against Workplace Sexual Violence. She joined us to talk about sexual harassment complaints filed with the federal government this week against McDonald's and its franchisees, as well as the broader issue of harassment in low-wage jobs.
This year, Wisconsin Public Radio is going beyond the ballot, asking Wisconsinites what's on their mind this election season, and we're meeting them where they are, out in the community.
After 17 people were killed at a high school in Parkland, Florida in February, many young people started talking about guns as a political issue. In Madison, 3,000 students left class and walked to the Capitol advocating for tougher gun laws.
Madison East junior Carson Tominey sat down with his government teacher Nick Adams to talk about this issue and more.
All right, Carson, so okay. You're going to be too young to vote this fall, but if you could vote, would you?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I will not turn 18 until this December, so I'll be too young. But if I could, I'd definitely exercise my privilege to vote. Mr. Adams, are you going to vote this fall, and why?
Yeah, I will. I haven't missed an election since I was able to start voting in 2000. That was my first election. That's the easiest opportunity for me to have a voice. By me voting, I'm also setting an example, not only for my students, but for my children who like to go vote with me.
Absolutely.
So as we come up into the November election, what is the single most important issue to you?
There's definitely a lot of important issues to me, but if I had to single out one of them, I would say maybe the most controversial issue as of late would be gun control. And you see, school shooting after school shooting. And at this point, to me, it's not about, politicians sending thoughts and prayers to families, but rather, making actual changes to, stricten up gun control laws and, take action before more people die.
It's interesting hearing you say that that's your number one issue. It's been more persistent since Stoneman Douglas. The fact that it's had this lasting of an impact surprises me, mostly because, no offense to teenagers, but they're so focused on the now, and that was then, even though it was only, 3 months ago, I'm surprised to learn that this is still a sizable issue and that maybe will have some longevity. If it can last the summer, I think it can be still an issue in November, but I'll say I'm pessimistic that it will last the summer.
What do you hope that students get out of your government class this year?
What I'm hoping, I'm hoping you get out of this too, and we only have a month left, but my hope is that you know how to vote and that you know the barriers that you have to overcome to vote, like registering, making sure you have the right ID, that type of stuff, and where to go vote. I'm hoping that my students understand how they can participate in the elections. You know, come fall, I'll have them do a lot of research on the issues. What are the candidates' stances on the issues so they can walk away with knowledge from both sides? You know, one of the things I've noticed in this school, this community, is it's very left-leaning. Make sure they expose them to the right, you know, to the the conservative sides of the issues, because maybe they only hear what they hear in their little echo chambers, right? Like Facebook, you're not hearing the conservative side of it. So I'm going to make sure that we balance, you know, I balance the issues so that if they can vote in November, they can make informed decisions. And they're not just voting a certain way because somebody told them to do so. You know, I want them to do it because they want to do so.
That was Madison East Jr. Carson Tominey and his government teacher, Nick Adams. For more stories like this one, visit WPR.org/ballot, or to share your story, call our hotline at 877-782-8942.
Coming up Monday on Central Time, we'll talk with the author of a book that profiles each of Wisconsin's 37 servicemen who were missing in action in the Vietnam War.
Today is the deadline for Democratic candidates for governor to file their papers in order to get a speaking spot at the party's upcoming convention. We'll take a look at who made the cut.
All that and much more coming up on Central Time on Monday.